news and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much. It's interesting. I got an angry message from someone that says I'm not a doctor, so please stop giving COVID shot advice. I didn't give advice. I said what I'm doing. I'm not getting the shot. That's what I said. I'm not getting it. I didn't tell you what to do. As a matter of fact, I said exactly the opposite. This is the kind of conversation. And by the way, we're not talking about this hour, but it's interesting how this still conjures up such emotion in people. I was very clear. I got the COVID vaccine. I got booster shots the first time around. I've got all the science now in front of me. I've been tracking this since the very first day that the state of Arizona released numbers. Based on the numbers that I see, I'm not getting the vaccine again. That's my personal choice. I've also said I love and respect people in my life that are getting the vaccine, and God bless them for getting the vaccine. I was very clear in that statement, and someone still sent me a message and said I shouldn't be given COVID advice. This is exactly the kind of emotional reaction that people had. I was diplomatic. I was not condemning anybody on either side. And I said, this is what I'm doing. This is the decision I've come to. And I still got criticized for giving advice. Didn't give one word of advice. But this is the kind of emotion that these things conjure in people. Let's get on to the topic at hand. Phoenix is given 45 days to clean up the zone. I want to talk about this and let you hear a few things. Barry Markson talked about this. Because the city was pretty criticized, they were really criticized by a judge. And I want you to hear Markson. Now, Barry Markson is a host here at KTAR News. He's also our legal analyst. He had this to say.
The city's going to have to look for some different options. It's going to cost a lot of money. They're using some hotel beds now. They may have to go out and rent or buy other hotels to put these people in for now. I'm not sure if it's even possible to do what the court's order is in a way that does not cause other civil and potentially constitutional liabilities for the city, given what the city's saying and how long it takes for them to move each person.
So this is where the my issue with this, and I feel for the city in a number of ways. I'm not happy with their inaction, according to the judge, but I will say that what do you do for the people that refuse services? You have courts that tell you that you have to fix the problem. But if you don't have cooperation and involvement from the people that are in that situation, what are you to do? You know, you've got the ACLU that says, hey, if there's no place for them to go indoors and they choose not to have services, you can't do anything. Federal law says you can't. The ACLU is also suing the city. If there are people that say, I'm not taking you up on your services. You don't have a place for me to go. And you say you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. You can't move me. That's what the law says. And that's what the ACLU is saying. This is going to take the attitudes of everybody in our community to be what it should be. And that is, it is a horrible situation to be in. Honestly, the thought of not having a home scares me. The idea that I would have children and not have a home for my children breaks my heart. I truly am sympathetic with anybody in the situation. But whether it's a self-induced situation or it was one that was caused by circumstances, you have to get yourself out of the situation. I've compared it to a disease only in the sense that You have to be a participant in solving the problem. If you get diagnosed with lung cancer and you smoked all your life, there are going to be people that are say that that's a consequence of your behavior. But the cure also depends on your participation. There are other people that get diagnosed with cancer that have lived a healthy lifestyle, that it is just something genetic within them and it's something that happened to them and it's not their fault. Either way, the course of treatment is dependent on you, the patient, participating. Whether you caused it, you didn't cause it, it just happened, the circumstances are still the same. And the treatment depends on you. I've used myself as an example with what is not, you know, nearly as dramatic as having cancer. Many people suffer like I do from hypertension, a severe hypertension. For those of you that know blood pressure, I'm pretty honest about my life. I've led a pretty healthy life most of my life. I have severe sleep apnea. I didn't realize what a contributing factor that is to high blood pressure. And there was a morning when I bought a blood pressure cuff. I woke up one morning and my blood pressure was 207 over 127. And I didn't have a stroke, but I sure should have. And I went to the emergency room and I've gotten treatment. I sleep with a machine called a BiPAP. I take medications every day to moderate my blood pressure. My blood pressure is normal. I have to stay religious in my taking of the meds. I have to even take naps with that machine, never sleep without it. And if I do those things, I have a chance of staying in good health and living a long life. If I don't take my medications as prescribed, if I am intermittent or I don't sleep very often with that mask, there is a very good chance that that's going to kill me someday. Without my participation, I have no chance of getting better. It doesn't matter how good my doctors are, how good my insurance is, how good my medication is. It doesn't matter. If I don't participate, oh, is it fair? No, it's not fair. I hate it. I hate sleeping with that mask. I thank God for it, but I don't want to do any of that stuff. I don't want to get on an airplane when I travel and have to take a machine with me. It is a symbol that I'm getting older and I don't like it. And, you know, all that's true, but I have to participate. And it's one of the attitude shifts we have to have. We can be empathetic. We can give our hearts and our money and our time to people in this cause, which I do, and I hope you do as well, and try to help and encourage people to get themselves out of their circumstances. But if they refuse to participate, there's nothing that we can do. Otherwise, you're just warehousing people so they're not on the street. It's not changing their circumstance. And in that regard, I feel for the city. There are amazing private organizations that have really good programs that are helping people. A focus on this, I think, is an excellent thing. I don't like how critical they were of the city. I wish the city had done more so that it wasn't as criticized as it's been. But it is what it is now. Now they've got till November 4th to do something about this. They can appeal it. They can do what they want. But this is a situation that every one of us in our community are going to have to participate in. And if the people that find themselves in that situation are willing to do what's necessary to reverse what created their homelessness, whatever it is, their fault, not their fault, they're going to have to participate. We can put a dent in it. The other thing we have to do is realize, and people that are on the streets have to realize, you are required to live at a minimum lifestyle that the rest of us are. What I mean by that is I can't do drugs and leave needles on the sidewalk in front of my house. I can't relieve myself in public. I can't commit acts of prostitution or sexual exploits in public for people to see. I can't do that, and neither can you. Your circumstances don't mean that you can go around the law, that there is a minimum level of behavior that's required. And if you break the law, you have to pay a consequence like anybody else does. Those two things would go a long way into helping the current people in this situation. The others beyond that of keeping people in their homes and teaching people at a younger age how to be less likely to be in that situation are the other treatments for this. And I hope we do it. I hope we're on the cutting edge of this. We've got to talk about the economy. The feds are holding rates steady. Is that good news? Are people going to have more confidence in the economy? And we have to talk gas prices because they are outrageous. All of that's coming up here very, very soon.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
The Fed holds interest rates steady, but pencils in one more rate hike this year. It's very expensive for people. It's more expensive to borrow money. There's a lot of moving parts to this that, you know, that pertain to companies more than it does individuals, although it does affect individuals. When you have more and more people having to use credit cards in order to pay for things and interest rates on credit cards continue to increase dramatically, you end up seeing that people are finding themselves trapped. They're trapped with having to make minimum payments, barely keeping their heads above water with no end in sight. And everybody knows if you're making minimum payments on a credit card, it takes you so much longer and it's so much more expensive to pay down that debt. That's personal income or personal finances for people. But how about small businesses? So we're going to get the gas prices in a moment. But for a small business and the lifeblood of a company being a line of credit sometimes. And I just had this conversation with someone in the roofing industry I'll be talking about more and more. But we were talking about people paying and that, you know, you have customers that you work for, especially in the commercial industry, where sometimes it is net 60, 90, 120 days before you get paid. And as a small business owner, you think about the expense of your overhead if you have an office that you have to pay for, all of your employees and the salaries you have to pay every week and the match you have to have in their taxes and all of the money that you owe to suppliers and whatever industry you're in. And if you have to float that money on one job for 90, 60, 90 days even, you better have a pretty big bankroll in order to finance your company. And for most companies, as a startup, you don't have that kind of cash on hand. And the ones that do are people that are already wealthy. So the entrepreneur out there that doesn't have a lot of money to start out but has a great idea, it makes it much more difficult for them when they don't have access to cash to run their business while it grows until they have that bank account where they can, they have their, they're basically their own banker. Well, it also costs them money to borrow that money. Banks are less likely, and they're trimming down the amount of credit that they're giving small businesses for fear of more bank collapses. And it's also more expensive. They pay higher interest rate on that money, which means it cuts right into the profitability of that business. So all of this is connected together. Gas prices are creeping up again. What's the blame this time? And where are they the highest is the headline. Arizona has seen a huge increase in fuel prices. And so once again, how it affects the individual, we all understand. It is like a tax. If you're paying 21 cents more per gallon this week than you were last week, do the math. And how, you know, when every dollar counts, being raised the way I was raised, you don't understand when you're a kid. I don't, you know, and you shouldn't. It wasn't that it was bad, but kids don't understand. That, you know, when you get paid every other week, my brother and his wife are cops and they have a joke in their family. They get paid every other week. And the kids were always knew that there were 2 weeks in the pay cycle. There was pay week and there was poor week. And so they knew to ask for something during pay week that there was no money for them during poor week. And there are a lot of families that their budgets are that tight. Being raised by a single mom like I was, I had no clue what every penny meant and how to stretch every dollar. And my mom would use the greens, remember S&H green stamps, and to cut every corner she could to stretch every dollar as much as she could. And I, you know, when families are doing that and then all of a sudden there's this spike in fuel prices, where do you get that money from? It has to come from somewhere. It's one of the reasons when I talk about St. Mary's Food Bank, with rent and mortgages being so high, with food costs being as high as they are, fuel prices, you have to have fuel in your vehicle to get to work to get paid. So what happens if a parent goes hungry? A parent's never going to complain about that in front of their child as long as their children can eat. But when you're not feeding your family, when you have high gas prices that do that to you, where it's got to be in your tank and your kids don't know it, but you're thinking, I got to put the money in the gas tank. So I'm not going to buy lunch. I'll either take something from home or I'll get something when I get home, but I'm going to skip that meal. That's a reality for many people. In small businesses, if you are, and I was in the contracting business, and I only had one or two trucks people met on job sites. We called them gang box jobs, where my guys met on the job sites. But if you're a contractor in the service industry and you've got multiple vehicles on the road and you're doing service work in people's businesses and in people's homes, and gas prices spike 21 cents per gallon in 1 week, and you have five or six trucks on the road that don't get very good gas mileage because they're weighted down with tools and material, and you're driving all over the place, and they've got a 25-gallon tank, that fuel bill at the end of the month comes right out of the bottom line of your business. So it's not good for the economy. And how do we solve these problems where we moderate it? When we know that nations that are not fans of ours continue to hold back on the production of oil so that it inflates the price per barrel, knowing that it's going to hurt other people and we aren't or can't do anything about it. Those are the issues I take when I say policy that can be changed and should be changed. In a moment, one of the nice conversations that has to do with elections, the lieutenant governor. We will elect a lieutenant governor in 2026. How will this change the state of Arizona, and is it a good thing? We'll discuss it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
I'm going to Shreveport and down to New Orleans. Been traveling these highways, been doing things my way. It's been making me lonesome.
Said it before, I'll say it again. God bless Waylon Jennings. This is every old guy's theme song. Lonesome, ornery, and mean. The older you get, more happy about it. You get to an age where you're just happy about it. Thanks for being here. So, you know, Waylon Jennings, Merle Haggard, anytime I can hear that, you're going to get more of it probably than you want, but I could listen to that album all day long. Thanks for being here. Arizona is going to elect its first lieutenant governor. I hate giving a civics lesson. Most of you already know this, but I think this is a move in the right direction for the state of Arizona. This has nothing to do with Adrian Fontes, our current Secretary of State. It's not an insult to him. But the people of Arizona like the idea, and I think around the country are learning, and they do it in most places in the country, where we elect a lieutenant governor much like we elect a vice president. We know who we're voting for. They're on the ticket with the governor. So you're voting for a team that if that governor cannot complete the job as president or as governor, that the lieutenant governor steps in. The way we do it now is the Secretary of State is first in line. And the Secretary of State is elected because the Secretary of State oversees elections. But we also have to keep in mind that that person is first in line for the governor's office. This is not a slap at all at Adrian Fontes. This is just saying that the people of Arizona would like to have a team. We saw with the election of Janet Napolitano, Governor Napolitano, she was a pretty liberal Democrat governor in a state at the time that was pretty dark red, and she worked with a very Republican legislature. Well, there was a dramatic shift in the middle of her term as governor, because she took a job as the Homeland Security Secretary under Barack Obama, and Jan Brewer, who was polar opposites of her politically because of Arizona's constitution, and she was the Secretary of State, became the governor. And there were a lot of people that had voted for Janet Napolitano that thought, well, that's not really fair that we've elected somebody of one political leaning and we ended up now, because of default, got somebody completely opposite. We had every right to vote for another Secretary of State, but you look at the Secretary of State's office for what they do in overseeing elections and the other specifics of that job, not their qualifications to be governor. So that's what the lieutenant governor will do. You'll vote for them as a team. The candidate, I think it's 60 days or 90 days before the election, they have to declare who their running mate is going to be. So when you vote for one, you vote for the other. It's not separate tickets. It's one ticket. And we're going to do this in 2026. I think it's a good idea. That way, you know, if when we go to reelect Governor Hobbs, if we reelect Governor Hobbs, we will know who that lieutenant governor is. And then that lieutenant governor fills the role like a vice president does. Could be chief of staff, could be some other roles that are dictated by the governor. But then we will know who would step into the governor's role if the governor can't or doesn't finish the term. I like the idea, and I think the people of Arizona are going to like it. But I do wonder what it does with the huge influx of independent voters. You know, honestly. So what happens, just a case study. It was a very close election between Governor Hobbs and Kari Lake. It was the separation was not very much. And would it have changed people's minds had Governor Hobbs had to choose a running mate that wasn't necessarily, in the end, popular with independent voters? Or the other way, what if Kari Lake had chosen a running mate that more moderate Republicans or independent voters liked? Would it have changed that direction? How much would a running mate change it? I don't know if there's a really good answer to that. Because most of the time, unless, you know, like John Kerry picked John Edwards, and I don't know that that helped or hurt him. John McCain, you know, and what he did in choosing Sarah Palin, Governor Palin, as his running mate, did it hurt him or help his chances? Well, I'll be honest with you. I was talking with people in the studio when Barack Obama announced that he had chosen Joe Biden as his running mate. And I thought that was going to be the death of the Obama campaign, and not because I hated Joe Biden, but because the message of the Obama campaign was hope and change and a new direction and a younger voice. And he was running against John McCain, who had been in the Congress for a very, very long time. And I thought, you've chosen a running mate, and he's like the only guy in the United States Congress that had been there longer than John McCain. You're doing the opposite with your VP than what you're saying your campaign stands for. I was so wrong about Barack Obama, but that's, you know, we do look at the vice president's role. Will we look at the lieutenant governor's role when it's chosen, and what will that do to a campaign? Who they choose. Because ultimately what we've done for governor is we choose the person we think that's most equipped to run the state out of the two candidates that are there. We know we may have a no labels candidate. Who knows if we'll have a third party candidate. But just in the two party system, we vote for the candidates themselves. How much of a role does the VP nominee play in that candidate's success? So it's just, you know, that look at elections. Ron DeSantis seems as if he, oh, and by the way, speaking of no labels, here's the headline. No labels push in closely divided Arizona fuels Democratic anxiety about a Biden spoiler. I think that if the Democrats believe that Joe Biden is the front runner to win Arizona again, I just think that that's wishful thinking right now. I don't think that he's the favorite in Arizona, and I could be completely out of touch. I've been wrong many times before, but I think he's got a lot of catching up to do no matter what happens. It does depend on who the nominee is, but Joe Biden is not necessarily a shoo-in to win Arizona a second time. So what a third-party candidate is a good question. But Governor DeSantis, Ron DeSantis, proposes a plan he says will achieve $2 gas and turn the U.S. into a world top energy producer. The only reason why that headline is significant to me is because you now are seeing candidates that seem to be focused more on policy statements. I think they may be learning their lesson from the last debate, which was more about gotcha answers and one-liners and less about talking to the American people about, A, the issues we face, and, B, the solution to those issues in the opinion of the people running. And so I think we're going to get more into policy. And, of course, we know that Donald Trump, former President Trump, is going to address the United Auto Workers, and I'm anxious to see how he's received by that group. So it's interesting to me. Coming up, the Arizona Attorney General says that Arizona cannot send guns to Ukraine, but she doesn't like it. And we're going to talk about why she doesn't like it coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about amnesty for over 400,000 people. Is it pseudo-amnesty? We're going to talk the border. Of course, did you hear this at 11:20? We're also going to talk about the economy. But this gun issue, and it was just a statement by the Attorney General that kind of got me, and there's some headlines here before we get to it, that we're talking about reducing shootings. Phoenix has spent $15 million to put social workers on the streets. Is it helping in reducing violent crimes? A suspected robber who allegedly pistol whipped a clerk at a store stopped in his tracks by an armed Good Samaritan, according to the police. There are families that were in a Minnesota council meeting angry because they were carjacked violently. They said, we've had enough, and they want the city council to do more. And in California, a deputy was murdered and a chaplain killed by someone that was 24 years old, a 24-year-old man. That 24-year-old has now been granted youth offender parole. So we understand that violent crime is a big issue and that we all want it to stop. I am frustrated often by the anti-gun sentiment by people that are ignorant and real. And I don't mean ignorant in an insulting way. They don't know anything about gun owners or gun ownership. It is the gun themselves they have a problem with. And anybody that has one is dangerous, which is not true. But the attorney general gave her professional opinion as the attorney general, saying that the Phoenix decision by the city council to donate firearms, between 500 and 600 handguns and shotguns that had been unclaimed in the city of Phoenix, they were going to send them to the Ukrainian police. It violates a state law that says that those firearms have to be sold to agencies or to and I'm going to read this from you, and they have to be sell them to an authorized business instead. So here's the quote from the attorney general. While my office has determined that Phoenix ordinance conflicts with state law concerning firearms disposal, I am deeply troubled by these statutes. These laws are inflexible. Like most laws are inflexible. These laws are inflexible and frankly offensive to the victims of crime and communities affected by gun violence. And I just absolutely disagree with that statement. I think it's absolutely not insulting to victims of crime. So if I'm just hypothetically speaking, if you are arrested for a DUI in which you cause a crash and your vehicle is impounded and you don't get your vehicle back, and the city says, we're going to sell that vehicle to somebody in our community, is that insulting to the victim of a DUI crash? Well, the answer is no, because you're not selling it to a drunk driver. You're selling it to a responsible driver, and it brings money into the city. So the idea that selling firearms to legitimate firearms dealers that are going to sell those firearms to legitimate firearms owners somehow is an insult. You're actually curing the problem, in my humble opinion. But at the very least, it's neutral. It certainly isn't adding to crime. The idea that more guns means more crime isn't true. As a matter of fact, when good guys are armed, bad guys don't want to mess around. It's an equalizer. For, you know, a single mom who lives alone to have a shotgun in the house is an equalizer. For a woman that works at night and has to walk to a dark parking lot to have a handgun in her purse is an equalizer. How many, you know, so we don't begrudge this. It's interesting. We don't look at women that carry, pepper spray or capstan, or if they have some kind of a taser unit, something to defend themselves if they're attacked. We think that they are being a responsible, proactive person in their safety. We understand, you guys too, but we're talking about women that work, you know, and they are in compromising situations. They're alone in a parking lot somewhere to have some means of protecting themselves. We admire them for that. Put a gun in the situation and all of a sudden the gun's part of the problem. No, pepper spray in the hands of a criminal is used to commit a crime. Pepper spray in the hands of an innocent person can stop a crime. Same thing with a firearm. Same thing with these firearms that the city has that have gone unclaimed. And to sell them to a responsible firearms dealer is the right thing to do. I told this story a couple of years ago. There was a business, someone that came to this country as an immigrant. I know they were somewhere in Europe, and I'm not sure where, but they were European. And they said at one point, owning a gun in Arizona was a novelty because where they came from, nobody was allowed to have guns. So they bought a couple of guns. And then there was a shooting in California, and they decided it's no longer a novelty. So we have given our guns to the Phoenix Police Department. These were restaurant owners here in town. And I thought, well, you don't know the law because you didn't take guns off the street. What you did was give them to the police department that by law is going to sell them to someone else. So those guns are going to remain on the street just in someone else's hands. But then you did a story with the newspaper and you told everybody in town, including the criminals, we are no longer armed. We've given our guns away. That's not smart either. The idea that guns themselves are evil, that because these guns are going to go into the hands of responsible gun owners, it's a slap in the face to crime victims, doesn't make sense. And I say that respectfully. I have a deep amount of respect for the attorney general. We have a good rapport. This is not a slap at her. It's just a weird thing to say, in my opinion, that somehow the guns themselves are inherently evil. I don't believe that's the case. As a matter of fact, like I said, selling those guns to responsible gun owners is actually going to make some places safer, certainly some homes safer. What we're going to do just after 11 o'clock, the President of the United States is clearing a path for hundreds of thousands of Venezuelan citizens to be able to stay here and work here, the ones that are already in the country. Is this, and it is my opinion that it will, is this going to be an incentive for more people to come as the weather cools down, as it's safer to cross illegally because it's not, they're not dying in the weather? Are we going to see a huge increase because of this? We'll discuss it next.